Hello, and welcome to This Week in History class. I'm your host, John Larson. This week we are going to be talking about the 1970s, and for the most part, we're going to be sticking to pop culture. We are going to be talking a little bit about the environment, but really it's going to be a lot of kind of fun movie reviews, Broadway, music, a number of different things that are going on in the decade in pop culture. Before we get to all that entertainment, though, I want to start off with something that one of our students put together, Alana, and that's a short about the environment.
Hi, I'm Alana Lund, and I'll be talking to you about the environmental movements of 1970. Americans celebrated the first Earth Day in 1970, and Congress passed the National Environmental Policy Act that same year. The Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act followed 2 years later. The oil crisis of the late 1970s drew further attention to the issue of conservation. By then, environmentalism was so mainstream that the U.S. Forest Service's Woody Owl interrupted Saturday morning cartoons to remind kids to give a hoot, don't pollute. The idea came to Earth Day founder Gaylord Neilson, then a senator from Wisconsin, after witnessing the ravages of the 1969 massive oil spill in Santa Barbara, California. On the 22nd of April, 2 million Americans took to the streets, parks, and auditoriums to demonstrate for a healthy, sustainable environment in massive coast-to-coast rallies. Thousands of colleges and universities organized protests against the deterioration of the environment. Groups that had been fighting against oil spills, polluting factories, power plants, raw sewage, and toxic dumps, pesticides, freeways, and the loss of wilderness and the extinction of wildlife suddenly raised the shared common values.
Thanks, Alana. Now we're going to get into some entertainment. We're going to start off with a television series that starts off really in the 1960s, but goes all the way through even to today, and that is Doctor Who. Take it away, Zach.
Who is the Doctor?
Doctor Who?
Exactly. Doctor Who is a show that was created by BBC workers Sidney Newman, Donald Wilson, and C.E. Weber in 1968. The show first aired on November 23rd of 1968, and after 50 years, it is still going strong to this day.
The show follows the adventures of a humanoid alien called the Doctor. The Doctor's species are known as Time Lords. Time Lords originated from the planet of Gallifrey. They are very smart, and they have the ability to regenerate when they get seriously hurt or are close to dying. As a result, their physical appearance and personality will change through every regeneration. The Doctor travels through time and space in a blue police box that is bigger on the inside. The Doctor, along with his trusty companions, saves the universe wherever he goes. During the 1970s, the show was becoming pretty popular. Not many people in the U.S. had heard of it, but in Britain, it was becoming very popular. The actor that played the Doctor was John Peterwee and Tom Baker during the 1970s. People thought it was a great show because of its complicated idea. During 1972, the show was actually sold to television stations in the U.S. Time Life Television aired the show during John Peterwee's time as the Doctor. The show did not do very well because some of the episodes were meant to be watched one after the other to tell a whole story, like a part one, part two kind of thing. But the station would air them in a shuffle, and people would get confused and just mad. In 1978, Tom Baker's first four seasons were sold to PBS stations across the U.S. PBS took the show to a face value, but it soon achieved a cult status. Thank you for listening to my podcast. Alonzi.
Thanks, Zach. And might I say, Geronimo. From British television and the Doctor, we now go to New York and Broadway. And to tell us a little bit about what's going on in the 70s on Broadway is Aaron.
Broadway is back and bigger than ever. The 70s saw a flood of rock musicals come to its stages, such as Hair, Jesus Christ Superstar, Tommy, and Rocky Horror Show. Some of these shows, such as Tommy, contained little to no dialogue and were dubbed rock operas. The variety of shows on Broadway at the time was quite extensive, as there was also an influx of African-American musicals. Shows such as Raisin, Dreamgirls, and The Wiz dominated top charts and brought many new customers to the New York stages. Everyone knew the story of the Wizard of Oz, but many African Americans had a hard time connecting with it. Ken Harper realized this and decided to rewrite the famous musical into a retelling in the context of African American culture. The Wiz became the first show on Broadway with an all-black cast and showcased Broadway's mainstream acceptance of different works. The Wiz was a huge push for the African Americans, as it introduced the rest of the country to the African American ways while still using a familiar story. 1975 brought a chorus line to the forefront of musical theater, based off of therapy session recordings of gypsies, the people who sing and dance in support of the leading players, and it became a huge hit, eventually becoming the longest-running musical of its time. The 1970s also welcomed musicals that started to stray from the original style and substance. Cabaret dove into the issues of Nazi Germany, while Chicago, which took place during the Prohibition, used vaudeville techniques to tell the tale of a murder. Near the end of the decade, Evita and Sweeney Todd started the move into the darker musicals with bigger budgets, enthralling scores, and spectacular effects. Even while these up-and-coming shows started appearing, many old-fashioned musicals kept their ground, including Annie and 42nd Street. The 70s were also a big decade for film versions of musicals, and while many flopped, others, such as Grease, Cabaret, and Fiddler on the Roof, were considered successes in the box office and went on to become classics that are still enjoyed today.
Now we move from the Broadway to the big screen, and a review of Jaws. Here to tell you about it are Colin and Tyler.
Hey guys, it's Colin and Tyler. We're going to talk about a movie that came out in the 1970s called Jaws. I'm going to tell you about the cast, and Tyler's going to tell you the plot of the movie. Here are some of the cast members. The captain of the ship, Orca, was Quint, who was played by Robert Shaw. The scientist of the movie, or the biologist, was Matt Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss. The police chief of the movie, also the main character, was Martin Brody, who was played by Roy Shader. Martin's wife was Ellen Brody, who was played by Lorraine Gary. These are the main characters of the movie.
Okay, I'm going to tell you the plot now. In the town of Amity Island, New England, a young lady is attacked and killed by a shark. Mark Brody, the police chief, ordered that all the beaches be closed in precaution, but the mayor rejected the idea because the town thrives on tourists visiting the beaches. Some of the local fishermen pulled up a tiger shark, and so the townspeople believed that the shark was no more, but it was the wrong shark. With the beaches still open for the 4th of July celebration, Mark, knowing many people, including his children, would be swimming in the ocean, he realizes he must take the matter into his own hands. So with the help of Matt Hooper and Captain Quint, they head out on a journey to kill the great shark. They use their boat and throw Chum out into the water to lure in the shark. They then harpoon the shark, which causes the shark to pull the ship backwards and lower the rear, which lets water in. They harpoon it again, and they try to pull it to shore to suffocate it. With the extreme power of the shark, the engine is damaged. So Hooper then scuba dives down into the ocean and tries to stab the great shark with a spear, but it didn't work. The shark jumped out of the water onto the boat and devoured Captain Quint. Mark then throws a pressurized tank into the shark's mouth and shoots it with Captain Quint's shotgun, which blows the shark into pieces.
Now you know about the popular movie in the 1970s called Jaws. Back to Jay Lars.
Thanks, guys. Now, moving from the big screen, we move to music. And Courtney is going to tell us a little bit about the band Queen.
Queen is a British rock band formed in London in 1970, originally consisting of Freddie Mercury, lead vocals and piano, Brian May, guitar and vocals, John Deacon, bass guitar, and Roger Taylor, drums and vocals. In 1975, the band gained international success. The latter featured Bohemian Rhapsody, which stayed at number one in the UK singles chart for 9 weeks. It charted at number one in several other territories and gave the band their first top 10 hit on the US Billboard Hot 100. Their 1977 album, News of the World, contained two of rock's most recognizable anthems, We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. Lead singer Freddie Mercury was born on September 5th, 1946, and he died on November 24th, 1991, at the age of 45, in Kingston, London, England. The latest album from Queen was released in November of 2014 called Queen Fever.
Thanks, Courtney. Finally today, we've got a little different type of entertainment, one many of you probably have tried, at least, if not mastered, and that is the Rubik's Cube. Here to tell us about it is Andrew.
Hello there. My name is Andrew Kulzer. Today I'm going to be telling you about the Rubik's Cube. While I do this, I'm going to be solving the Rubik's Cube I have with me. The Rubik's Cube was invented in 1974 by Erno Rubik, and as you can hear from his name, that's how the cube got its name. Erno was a Hungarian architect professor. The Rubik's Cube wasn't always called the Rubik's Cube. When he first started producing it, he called it the Magic Cube. But when the Rubik's Cube made its international appearance in 1980, he rebranded it to the Rubik's Cube. In 1982, the first championship was held. The championships are basically showing how fast people can solve the Rubik's Cube. The records then were minutes, but now the world record is 5.5 seconds, which is pretty fast, but don't get discouraged. It took a month for Erno Rubik to solve his cube when he first created it. In 2010, we figured out God's number, which is the absolute minimum amount of turns to solve a Rubik's Cube. God's number is 20. And so if you're really good, like a supercomputer, you could look at a cube and solve it within at least 20 moves. As I said before, Erno was an architecture teacher. And as a teacher, Erno was always looking for new, more exciting ways to present information. He used the cube's first model to help and explain to his students about spatial relationships. Erno's students really enjoyed playing with the cube. They loved to twist and turn it and, you know, try to solve it. And Erno thought it was a great thing. He thought if his students liked it this much, maybe other people around the world would like to play with something like this and even try to solve it themselves. Erno wanted to mass produce the cube for other people to be able to play with it. But there was a problem. During the time, Hungary was part of the communist regime behind the Iron Curtain, and any imports or exports were tightly controlled. And the idea of mass producing something from Hungary was crazy. No one thought that he would be able to do it. It was by the help of his friend that he actually got the Rubik's Cube out of Hungary. His friend took it to the Nuremberg Toy Fair, I hate saying that word, in Germany, and he showed it to other people, and they really loved it, and that's what sparked the mass production of it. And now we're left with all these amazing creations today. Thank you for listening to my part of the History Extra. Hope you guys weren't too bored with it, and hope you guys enjoyed the solve. If you guys are wondering, that I did two solves in between them. I mixed it up a bit. They were both about a minute and a half long to 2 minutes long. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, that does it for this week in history class. Again, this week's presenters were Alana, Zach, Aaron, Colin, Tyler, Courtney, and Andrew. And we want to give a big thank you to everyone who did present this week, provide content. I also want to thank Ethan Frazier for our theme music. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at TWIHC at TWIC, or you can follow me at Twitter at TeacherJLars. Thank you again for listening. This has been This Week in History Class. Bye now.